racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
Once again, welcome to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. I'm Bob Bubka. So proud to be here with Jay Randolph Jr. You might know him better as the STL Golf Geek on Twitter. And, of course, he does an outstanding job running one of the great golf courses in America, Normandy Golf Club. It's the oldest course west of the Mississippi. Jay, I imagine St. Louis a little heat at the moment.
Yeah, the heat is coming. A St. Louis summer is upon us. It seems like now, Bob, we go from direct almost to winter to summer. There's hardly a spring anymore. We did get a lot of rain this spring, and the heat is starting to turn up, but we're still seeing golfers come out and play the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club.
Yeah, very rarely does anybody leave there without saying, boy, I'd love that. I want to come back. I'll tell you who wants to come back to the Rocket Mortgage Classic at Detroit Golf Club. He's another first-time winner on the PGA Tour, Jay, and a very special guy wins.
You know, we get these stories every couple of years, but I want people to think for a moment about the situation of Nate Lashley. I mean, you talk about a journeyman. You talk about what happened to him back in 2004. I mean, imagine losing your girlfriend and your mom and dad in a plane crash after watching you play in a college tournament. I mean, that in itself is something to overcome. And you look at the last couple of years, Bob, and this is what the PGA Tour tried to tell us. He won a couple of years on the Latin American Tour. Then he wins on the then web.com tour, now the KF Tour, and all of a sudden Monday qualifies and gets in a tournament at a new venue and waxes him. It's really amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you peel back the layers of that story, and you know, he dropped out of the game. He was trying to sell real estate, but obviously he had this burning desire inside that kept telling him, "Hey, look, Nate, you're good enough. You know, you're gonna have to man up." I mean, as you said, Jay, the mere thought of losing your mom and dad and your girlfriend in one fell swoop, and compounded, Jay, by the fact that, as you indicated, they were there to watch Nate play in a college tournament. I mean, so I don't know. I give him all the credit in the world for persevering. You know, it's his second year on tour. He's only played 33 events, and as we have documented very often on this show, it's just tough to get into a PGA Tour field. Essentially had no real status, playing in Monday qualifying. I mean, God, you can go broke fast doing that when you consider what it costs to get you there, the entry fee, the caddy, everything along those lines. And yet, realizing maybe I can catch lightning in a bottle, which we can only describe as what happened to Lashley last week was catching lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, I mean, it really is phenomenal what he did. When you look at the perseverance, and then, Bob, you look at the victory itself. I mean, the way in which he performed on this new golf course.
Yeah, I mean, he was almost like bulletproof, pressure-proof, you know, a couple of 63s during the week. I mean, come on. Even an under-par round on Sunday when he had that six-shot lead. Let's give a listen right now to what Lashley had to say following that inspirational victory.
I've been through a lot. You know, it took a lot of years for me to get over my parents' death, for sure. It was mentally holding me back for a long time, and not getting in through the Monday was a little disappointing. I felt like I played really well, but I knew I still had a chance, you know, outside chance of getting in. And then once I moved up to first alternate, I was just really happy. I was just excited to be in the golf tournament, really. Over the years, I felt like I've continued to get better and better. And so it's something I've always felt like I could compete out here, and I just kept telling myself that. So I knew that, you know, if I could just, you know, maybe get a little bit better, get a little better mentally, that I was going to have an opportunity out here to win. It's a career-changing event, getting a win out here. It gives you job security, gets you into majors. You know, you have 2 years to, you know, two more years to basically get more comfortable and play better golf. So, you know, there's you really can't put it into words of how much this means, and it's just huge for my career.
You know, Jay, when you realize that Lashley goes from 353rd in the world to 101st. That, you know, that's 250 spots he picks up. And obviously now he's going to be playing at Royal Port Rush. I know he's excited about that. But how about the fact that he's never ever even been overseas? So I hope he remembers to worry about getting a passport. Otherwise, he's going to have trouble, you know, when the day comes. But still, it's been a few days now, and I'm still shaking my head. I'm still truly admiring what he accomplished under those conditions. And I think on a side note, his new girlfriend did manage to come Sunday to watch him play, came with Nate's sister, Brooks. But I did get a chuckle when I heard that her name was Ashley, because if they do get married, it's going to be Ashley Lashley.
Ashley Lashley, how about that? I mean, this was a weird tournament. I got to tell you, they destroyed the golf course. And I want to make a point that this was not where Arnold won the amateur in 1954. This course is more toward Oakland Hills in the Birmingham area. But the other factor of it, you know, not only did you have a Monday qualifier win the golf tournament, Bob, you had a Monday qualifier finished second in the tournament. And this wasn't a chump change field. I mean, you had some big-time sticks playing up in D-Town. But Doc Redman finishes second as a Monday qualifier, the 2017 U.S. Amateur champ from Clemson. And now he's earned enough FedEx Cup points to get special temporary membership and unlimited sponsor exemptions. And plus, because he finished second and was not otherwise qualified for the Open Championship at Port Rush, he's heading to Port Rush as well.
Yeah, just amazing, you know, when you think of what happened. It was the second week in a row, Jay, that somebody's won by six shots. And on Sunday, Lashley wins by six, but it's Steve Stricker playing in the Senior Open. He wins by six, and there was a European Tour event, and that gentleman won by six. I mean, you know, it's unusual, to say the least, and, you know, to win a tournament by six shots. I mean, it certainly doesn't happen that often.
And your first, Bob, I mean, your first tournament victory by six shots, come on.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost storybook quality. The story that I'm getting a kick out of is the play of Rory Sabatini, one of the real good guys out there. He always donates to the military, big supporter. Now he's really on the move. How about this up that tour ladder, Jay? He started the year 200th in the world. After Travelers, he was 111th. After Rocket Mortgage, he's down to 84th. And he's doing something rather strange with his citizenship. Why don't you share that story with our listeners?
Well, obviously a South African, and then came here to the United States, played a lot of junior golf in the United States, and then kind of made the States his home, married a gal. They lived down in Dallas. But they've since parted ways. And now he's claiming Slovakia hoping to get, he's taken part citizenship of Slovakia to try and get an Olympic berth for Slovakia. I don't know who they're going to get to put with him on that Slovakian team. I didn't even know they had a team.
Well, I think maybe you ought to break out your sticks.
No. No.
You could be.
Isn't Slovakia cold? It was nice to see a little life from Patrick Reed. It was the first top 10, and this is hard to believe, since the start of the 2018-19 season. He's played some decent golf, but this was the first time he'd been in the top 10 in a long time.
You know, if you told me that at the beginning of the year, that Patrick Reed would have that kind of dry spell, I would have said impossible. He's too talented. I mean, he does have a green jacket in the locker, but it's just been one of those frustrating years. Maybe he's coming back a little bit. And then, you know, the guy that finished tied for 13th, what a story he is, Jay.
He continues back-to-back weeks making the cut in his first two professional starts after being the low amateur at not only the Masters this year, but also at Pebble Beach. The Oklahoma State Cowboy is doing his best to try and get enough dough to get some sort of status for the wraparound season upcoming. If not, he'll be relegated to the Corn Ferry Tour. Yes, I said it. But clearly, Victor Hovland has shown at the collegiate level and in his limited starts as a professional and even as an amateur that he can hang with these boys. His future looks bright.
Yeah, you know, the thing that impresses me, Jay, he seems very, very confident. He doesn't seem uncomfortable. He looked very comfortable out at Pebble Beach. He backs it up with a top 15 finish here at the Rocket Mortgage. Just something special about this young kid. Now, you know, will he go on to win? It may be 5 years from now. We're saying, boy, can't believe that Victor Hovland has not tasted victory yet. But it's just that tough on the PGA Tour. Ricky Fowler certainly not having the campaign that he was looking for. Finished 46th last week. Some doubts are starting to creep in. You know, that 1 year, Ricky Fowler finished in the top five of all four majors. We thought, well, it's just a matter of time before he gets that first major. But as you very well know, and anybody that follows this game, the longer it goes without getting that first major, the harder it becomes.
Well, and that leads us to the United States Senior Open at the Warren Golf Course at Notre Dame, because a guy who had never won a major championship got his first major championship. Granted, it was on the Champions Tour, but Steve Stricker, a very popular win at Notre Dame, six shots, as Bob mentioned earlier, at the United States Senior Open, and my, how times have changed, and Bob and I are adjusting, 19 under won the won the United States Senior Open, a six-shot win over defending champion David Toms and Jerry Kelly, who's making a fortune out on the Champions Tour. Stricker, never able to get to that level at the PGA Tour level, now has a major on the Champions Tour.
And I'm happy for him. Certainly, as you know, Jay, one of the real good guys out there. But I don't think we can emphasize enough the play of David Toms. He won last year at the Broadmoor. Now he finishes second in defense of his title. That's impressive stuff. Jerry Kelly, as you alluded to, he won last week, actually defeating Steve Stricker in the playoff. I mean, that was pretty amazing. And then we come to the name Bob Estes, who finished fourth. Didn't surprise me to see Bob Estes playing well. He's from Austin, Texas. Has been a good stick for a long time. What did surprise me, he's got the same caddy as when I met Bob Estes about 25 years ago. I mean, he must be an Iron Man, one of the nice guys out there. And he's been with Bob Estes a long time. And old Buckethead Kurt Triplett just continues to play some good golf.
You know, RoboPro is an interesting guy, Bob Estes. When he played, when he graduated from the University of Texas, came to St. Louis, Bob, and he played in what then was called the Bogey Hills Invitational. It was kind of the Masters of the mini tour. And he won the tournament, won 40 grand, and was able to kind of buy out his sponsors. And, you know, I don't even know if he necessarily has status on the Champions Tour. He should, by virtue of the way he played on the regular tour. But, I mean, that's huge for Bob. He's also a tremendous follow on Twitter. He doesn't mind sharing his opinion, and it's always good to see Bob Estes play good golf.
Yeah, he's a good guy, and enjoyed his play and personality and access to the media for a good number of years. Well, time to look ahead a little bit, Mr. Randolph. The 3M Open at the TPC Twin Cities in Blaine, Minnesota. They love their golf in Minnesota.
No, it's a great state as it relates to golf, similar to what we saw last week in Michigan. And the tour has not been there, obviously, in a long, long time. You know, these two events, we talked about the schedule earlier this year and how different that schedule was going to be. And you really look at it now, and it's almost totally different as you see these two new events. And then they'll go to the John Deere and then head over the pond for the British Open. But, you know, I'll be curious to see this week. Again, it's you still got some strong players in the field, but I don't know much about the golf course.
Well, the golf course, they added some length to it, Jay, about 300 yards since the Champions Tour played, you know, the 3M Championship there. Tom Lehman speaks very highly of it, and you know how high in regard we hold Tom Lehman. So if he says it's a good golf course, I'm certainly buying that. Pretty good field, as you alluded to, Jay, Brooks Koepka, Kevin Na, Patrick Reed. They're going to be playing together. Bryson DeChambeau, Charles Howe, Keegan Bradley. And what about Nate Lashley? He's going to be playing with Phil Mickelson and Tony Finau. I mean,
and last Monday, playing in a Monday qualifier, the following Thursday, hi, I'm Phil Mickelson. Hi, I'm Tony Finau. I mean, that's strong stuff. It'll be interesting to see how Nate handles, you know, I saw that he was celebrating at a pub with all his buddies. Enjoy it. Take it all in. I got to think he'll take the week off next week of the John Deere and maybe go over the pond and get a little situated over in Northern Ireland before he has to tee it up for the first time on foreign soil. Like you said, Nate Lashley's never left the country. Then you've got a trio of Jason Day, Hideki Matsuyama, two guys who've been playing better but haven't taken that next step in terms of getting back to the winner's circle, and Corey Connors, all three, Corey Connors the Canadian, all three looking to get on that International President's Cup team, so it's going to be important for them.
And one thing I would recommend to Nate Lashley is, having never been in Europe, take next week, as Jay said, off, go over early, and don't worry about getting to the range. I want you to go to any sidewalk in Ireland and practice looking the other way. I don't want you to get hit by a car. I mean, it takes some getting used to when you've never been to Europe, but hopefully Nate will make that transition very smooth.
Let's take a short break, and then we'll turn into some miscellaneous topics, a lot to get to in the world of golf. Who's going to be the player of the year? That's a real question mark. Who'll be left out of the top 125 and not get into the playoffs? And that means not have status for the wraparound season, which will start in October. And we are gearing up. Bob and Janice are going to be heading to Northern Ireland for the Open Championship. And this week, it's the Irish Open at one of our favorite spots, Lahinch. You're listening to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, iTunes, Audio Boom, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or you can just ask your smart speaker Alexa and you'll be connected.
Six Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at The Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
Welcome back to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. Thanks for listening to us on all of our different outlets, wherever you are tuning in. I'm Jay Randolph Jr., and you can find me on Twitter at STL Golf Geek. And I do want to mention, Bob, the month of July, Normandy and our management company, Walters Golf, and myself are trying to raise money for the Backstoppers here in St. Louis. It's an organization that helps when something happens to a police officer, fireman, or an EMT person, if they're hurt in the line of duty or their family needs help. If you got a dollar or $5 or $10, just go to GoFundMe and type in Jay Jr. Supports the Backstoppers. If you could give something, that'd be great. We're trying to raise $2,500. And Bob, I know how you feel about the police. So, just a way for us to kind of give back, but we got plenty to get to. I mean, here is a question for you, Bob. Who's the player of the year on the PGA Tour?
You know, what's amazing, Jay, I was just thinking, about that, and I cannot, in recent memory, remember a season with only one major left. And if you would ask me for my life who's going to win Player of the Year, I really have no idea. I mean, obviously, that indicates that it depends on what happens, I guess, at the Open Championship, that the lens will open up a little wider and we'll be able to get a better picture of who's going to walk away with that title. But it certainly has been an unusual year when there is no favorite to be player of the year.
I mean, I think everybody that kind of follows it and golf geeks would say, well, the default guy right now is Brooks Koepka, based on the way he played at the Masters, the fact that he won back-to-back PGAs, and he put himself into contention the final day of the U.S. Open. But really, I mean, that's, you're only talking about three or four events. You're not talking about, you know, five or six wins or, you know, 10 or 15 top tens. So, I mean, you're right. If Tiger wins the Open, how could he not be player of the year? It's fascinating. You know, we talked about Gary Woodland. Gary Woodland has had a nice year, but I don't think one major automatically makes you player of the year. I wonder how much the three of FedEx events, let's remember, we're just down to three now. There's no longer the fourth FedEx event. I mean, I guess, gun to my head right now, I'd have to say it is Koepka, but it doesn't have that same feeling like, oh, yeah, it's Brooks Koepka, because it's not, oh, yeah, it's Brooks Koepka. It's, well, I guess it's Brooks Koepka based on the majors.
Well, let me just go back to a point you made just a few seconds ago. You said that maybe if Tiger wins the Open Championship, he's player of the year. Believe me, the elapsed time from the winning putt falling in the cup at Royal Port Rush on the 72nd hole on that Sunday, if it's Tiger Woods' ball that gives him the championship, the discussion about player of the year is over. I mean, over. Automatically, certainly would have to be Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I would think the two majors, and again, a guy who doesn't, he's not playing week to week or every other week on the PGA Tour. He's gotten in this mode where, and part of it's based on the schedule, part of it's based on his age and his potential health situation, is that that's what it's all about. Now, I don't have any, I have no sense of how the man's going to play at Port Rush. And I think when you look back, when we started the year heading to Augusta, and Bob, it's all we talked about from January until right before the Masters was how good so many of the best players in the world were playing, and that we were on this collision course with DJ and Rory and Jason Day and, you know, potentially Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas and Finau, and here we go. And then Tiger wins the Masters. So, you know, we're still a couple of weeks away, but both you and I have been looking forward to this British Open for a long time. And we get a little sense of it this week with the Irish Open. You have covered golf tournaments in the Emerald Isle. I have been on three occasions, but I've only been to the southern part in the Killarney and the Kinsale areas of Ireland. Bob, how do you think the crowds are going to be at Port Rush? Will it be a more boisterous crowd because they haven't had this in so long and they're so fired up? What do you expect?
Well, in Ireland, they've really perfected the manner in which they dispense happy juice, and it is readily consumed. And I can assure you that those 4 days at Port Rush is going to be one gigantic party. I mean, they've waited 68 years for an Open Championship. And they are fun-loving, golf-loving people that have some of the great golf courses in the world. I mean, you go there and you play a place like Old Head and you say, wow, I can't believe it. Lahinch that you love so much and Royal Port Rush. I mean, you know, golf is in their blood there. I mean, everybody thinks Scotland automatically when you think golf. But, you know, Ireland is right there. I mean, they love their sport, and it is going to be fun. I mean, this Irish Open, and depending on what kind of leaderboard we get, do we get a Rory McIlroy or a Graham McDowell or Shane Lowry coming down the stretch, or is it going to be Brooks Koepka going head-to-head with Tiger Woods? I mean, the possibilities are incredible. I mean, it has me. I'm hoping. I'd wish that it would start tomorrow. I've been waiting for this for such a long time. But they deserve an Open Championship. They really deserve an Open Championship. Paul McGinley's been heavily involved in getting everything ready, and it's just going to be a blast. And I think it's going to be a blast whether you're watching it on TV or if you're over there in person.
Well, you and I have a tremendous affinity and appreciation and frankly love for the people of Ireland. They're more welcoming than those in Scotland. And if you've ever played around and had a pint of Guinness with your caddy, who's probably a member of the club anyway, it's just a unique spot. As Bob said, it's in their blood, and I just hope that for you and I and the rest of the golf fans that it turns out to be a great Open Championship, and we'll be talking more about that in the next couple of weeks. Something we're also going to be talking about, Bob, and you said it before we even started the broadcast. You said, man, we got about 3 weeks, it seems like, and this sucker's over. Well, we are pretty much 3 or 4 weeks from the playoffs, and there are only three normal events. And when we say normal events, PGA Tour sanction events, for guys that are not in that top 125 to try and get in that position, or guys to try and increase their position to try and get in that top 30 before it's all said and done. Before they head to the Tour Championship, you've got an interesting group of players that are outside of that 125 right now. Martin Kaymer, and I don't know that he even cares. I don't know that status is that important to him. the way he picks and chooses his schedule. I think the same can be said for Martin Laird, except he plays a little bit more in the U.S. And we talked, Bob, about Zach Sucker and his giant move last weekend or 2 weeks ago. He's at 128 right now. You know, Kuchar leads, but there's going to be a lot of jockeying in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's not only the top of that 125 list that people should focus their attention to. More compelling is what you alluded to, the ones that are outside that top 125 that you know, can more or less dictate where they get to play next year and a number of opportunities that will open up for them by getting into the top 125. So it's pressure time for a lot of guys right now.
No, I mean, this is that make or break time, because it is such a sharp difference in terms of the money, the prestige, as it relates to the Corn Ferry Tour. I can't believe I said it. The Corn Ferry Tour or the PGA Tour. You take a look now at some of the players that are going to try and get into that top 30 as well. Some guys that are outside the top 30. Hideki is 31st. Keith Mitchell, with his first tour win earlier this year, is 32nd. Jason Day is outside of that mark. So is J.B. Holmes. We talked earlier about Lashley and Sabatini. They're in that 40 category. So if they, you know, they've still got some time. But the guy who has really been the dominant player, you talk about player of the year. I mean, Matt Kuchar has got two wins, and he's got eight top tens. Koepka has two wins, and he's got six top tens. McIlroy's got two W's, and so does Xander Schauffele. So, you know, clearly, not only is the FedEx Cup title still up for grabs, but as we talked about earlier, player of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just incredible. You know, we don't place the value on the end of the season that guys that are outside that top 125 place on it, because they know what they do over the few remaining weeks really has a huge impact on where they get to play next year, what kind of opportunities they get. So it's wide open. We got some battles for the top 125. We got battles for the player of the year, and we're certainly going to have a big battle when we get to Port Rush.
Since Brooks Koepka is in this week's 3M Open field and most likely getting back into that major mindset, we thought like you'd like to hear Bob's conversation with his man, his golf coach, the teacher that guided Brooks from around 10 years old throughout his teenage years, the fantastic Warren Bakke, up next when we return to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, iTunes, Audio Boom, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, or you can just ask your smart speaker Alexa and you'll be connected.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elstoautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Welcome back to the Grill Room.
My next guest is Warren Bakke. He's the head professional down at PGA National, but there's a little more to the story. He's the one that kind of brought along Brooks Koepka at a very young age. I'm hearing, what, 10 years old?
Yeah, about 10 and a half, and I worked with him up to almost 18.
How quick did you recognize that you may have something here that a little bit special?
Well, you know, the first couple of years were very informative, and, you know, it was one of those situations where I knew after the first two, 3 years it was going to be something that was going to happen, and so it was awesome in the way that he was there, and I, you know, the first 10, 11 years old, 12 years old. The kids are having fun. You're trying to instill some fundamentals. And after that, around 14, I could start. The questions he was asking was trying to get him off the driving range at dark. It was very difficult. And having all that being said, I could see the needle was moving in the right direction. And at the age of those young ages, we're trying to build their motor program, their motor skills, you know, by running and jumping and skipping and hopping and trying to get their athleticism going. And that kind of gave him a head start to where he is today.
A lot of people in the media, we're having a little trouble come to grasp with actually what Brooks is accomplishing. I mean, it is so unbelievable. Probably going to go on to win the PGA. I'll tell people we're interviewing before the start of the fourth and final round, but he leads by 7 shots. He then is going to have as many majors as Rory McIlroy, as many majors as Ernie Els. I mean, saying those names, and more majors than Jordan Spieth.
Correct. Yeah, no, it's hard to wrap your arms around it. It's one of those situations where, you know, I didn't see it coming this quickly. And now he has so much momentum. It's going to be a situation, Bob, where, you know, he's talking about 10 majors. And I think that's achievable.
You know, one thing he does that I haven't seen in other players, Warren, is if he's putting well, he's quick to tell the media, well, look, I'm putting well right now, so I fully expect to make just about every 8 to 10 footer that I look at. Players in the past, the tradition was they never wanted to say they were putting well because they felt they would jinx themselves. But he seems immune to that.
Yeah, he's always been a great putter. A little quick story, when he was 13, you'll see now his routine the way it is. We had been at the golf course and they aerified the greens and they put a light coating of sand. And I had told him, I said, every time you go out to putt, please make sure that that club face is clean and wipe it off. And now when you go ahead and see him, he takes 3 practice strokes, wipes it, puts it down, looks at the hole and strokes it. And he's always been a great putter. And he always uses that as his crutch and his backup, because he knows he has a lot of confidence in him. He makes a lot of 5 and 6 and 7 footers for saves, for birdies, and it's just been incredible the way he putts.
Warren Bakke is my special guest here, early coach for Brooks Koepka. There's a lot of criticism, I think unjustified, in the media that he's rather aloof and doesn't seem to warm up to people. But deep down inside, the limited time I've gotten to know him, he's really a nice, nice guy.
He's a great young man. He's such a gentleman. It's kind of the kid you'd want to take home for your parents. I mean, he's so authentic. He's very transparent. You see what you get. There's no hidden agenda. And, you know, being around him for those formative years, I taught him some life stories. There were many conversations we had that he would talk to me on confidence and not his parents. And that's the whole thing about being a coach, is there's a trust factor. And last year, I wasn't able to be at Belrive. He gave me a shout out and told him if it wasn't for me, he wouldn't be here today. And I mean, it brought tears to my eyes because I didn't know how much I meant to him until he said that. I knew I meant a lot to him, but that really buckled my knees. And to see him every time I see him, he just gives me a hug. And we just have such a special relationship, and it's just so great that, you know, I did my job as a golf instructor and coached him, and he owes me nothing, but he keeps telling me I can't thank you enough. And it's hard to receive that because I did my job and you don't need to keep thanking me, but that's the kind of person he is.
Well, that's the medal of a true PGA club professional. They are the unsung heroes in the sport of golf. No questions asked about that. One last thing before I let you go. I have often said that choosing to go to Europe and hone his skills was a valuable segment in his maturity. You agree?
Yeah, totally agree. I think that really helped him a lot to grow up. And there was a time and a juncture there. He was there that first year, 9 months into it, where he called and he was going to call it quits. I mean, it was just too tough, you know, going through that. But The nice thing of it, he gutted it out. We were going to finish the race. This is what we set out to do. You told me you were going to play in the Masters. We did, and let's get it done. And he finished, and he persevered. He's got a lot of resilience, and that's what makes him the character he is.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
Thanks for spending some time in the Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.